This is Brian Cambria with the KVNF Regional Newscast from Monday, November 18, 2013. Two miners are dead and 20 more injured after an accident at the Revenue Virginia Silver Mine near Ouray yesterday morning. A project manager for Star Mining Operations, the company that owns the mine, told The Watch the accident wasn't caused by a cave-in or collapse, but rather by what he calls a powder smoke incident that exposed the miners to harmful chemicals. According to the Denver Post, authorities said the two miners who were killed died from carbon monoxide poisoning. An explosion was ruled out as the immediate cause of the incident that sent 20 other miners to Western Slope hospitals. There's confusion about the injured. Initially, one was listed as in critical condition, but no more details about that individual have come out. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports that 19 additional men were injured, not 20. 10 were taken to Montrose Memorial Hospital, where 2 were admitted in fair condition. 5 were taken to Delta County Memorial Hospital, where only 1 was admitted and is reported to be in fair condition. The last 4 were taken to St. Mary's Hospital in Grand Junction, and only 1 admitted, also listed in fair condition. The source of the poisonous gas is under investigation. At a press conference last night, authorities said they were looking at whether a small explosion in the mining process on Saturday might have been the source of the carbon monoxide. The miners who were killed were identified as 34-year-old Nick Capano of Montrose and Rick Williams, age 59, of Durango. It's reported that all the miners, including the dead, were equipped with rescue breather respirators. The incident was reported at 7:20 a.m. Sunday. All but the two dead miners made it out on their own. A rescue party reached the bodies at about 3 p.m. The mine is located about 7 miles south of Ouray, near the Yankee Boy Basin, and employs about 100 workers from Ouray, Montrose, and San Juan counties. Grand Junction High School was briefly put on lockdown Friday morning after an apparent suicide just blocks from the school. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports the school was placed on lockdown after a police report of shots fired nearby, but the incident didn't involve any students or staff. Police officials said a man died of a gunshot wound in a parking lot near the school. Colorado's 3rd District Congressman Scott Tipton says his bill aimed at protecting privately held water rights is still needed, despite a statement from the U.S. Forest Service this week that it would end its practice of asking for water rights from ski areas in exchange for forest use permits. The Glenwood Springs Post-Independent reports the House Natural Resources Committee on Thursday approved the Colorado Legislators' Water Rights Protection Act, House Bill 3189, H.R. 3189, and forwarded the bill for a vote in the full House of Representatives. On Wednesday, Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell issued a statement saying his agency had agreed to a policy change brokered with the help of U.S. Senator Mark Udall of Colorado, that would protect water resources without asking ski areas to turn over water rights to the federal government. Tipton responded that while encouraged by Tidwell's statement, it only affects one group of water users. According to Tipton and several supporters of the bill from Western Colorado, the water rights bill, which has bipartisan support, is meant to protect the rights of other users as well, including agricultural operations and energy development. Tipton said other federal agencies have also used the practice of requiring the transfer of private water rights in exchange for permitting, amounting to a taking, and that his bill would prohibit future Forest Service officials and other agencies from changing policy as leadership changes. The bill has been supported by the National Ski Areas Association and Colorado Ski Country USA, as well as one major Colorado ski resort owner, the Aspen Skiing Company. New figures show the debate over the proposed soda tax on Telluride's ballot this year drew in over $148,000 from outside donors. The measure, which would have created an excise tax on some sugary beverages, was rejected by 68% of voters. According to The Watch, the debate drew donations from corporate interest groups like the Colorado Beverage Association and the American Beverage Association, and from one philanthropy group founded by a Houston-based billionaire who lives part-time in San Miguel County. A ban on using drones to help with hunting is moving forward with Colorado wildlife authorities. ABC News 7 in Denver reports that the proposed ban was approved by the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission Thursday during a regular meeting. The commission is set to vote on the measure in January. If it passes, the ban would take effect next August. Using aircraft to spot wildlife during hunting is already illegal under federal law, but the new measure would make it specifically illegal to use unmanned aerial aircraft as well. By the end of this year, the movie industry will no longer release movies on film, which means smaller theaters across the country must either switch to digital or be forced to close their doors. In Colorado, the state is pumping up to $200,000 to try and save about a dozen rural movie theaters. But as Bente Berkland reports from Denver, the future of those theaters is still uncertain.
Joe Maqueda has owned the Sands Theater in the farming community of Brush since the late 1950s. His office is adorned with photos of the stars he's met over the years.
Chuck Norris and Robbie Benson. Of course, you know Michael Landon, Elm, and Margaret. That's my uncle there.
Clint Eastwood.
John Wayne. And there's Charlton Heston up there. Had me shaking hands with him. Look how big a guy he was.
The Sands sits right off of Main Street in the heart of downtown. Maqueda's grandparents owned a theater in a different town, and after he left the Navy, he said he knew he wanted to follow that path.
I loved the business and worked there with them, and I was starting the concession stand when I was about 13. I started out at a price of 25 cents for children, 60 cents for adults. That was our price. Business started out to be pretty good.
But business hasn't been good in a long time, and he says with fewer and fewer movies available on film, last year was a real struggle. He's also limited by only having one screen, and he says times are simply changing.
Saturday nights, the farmers, they come to the movie, we pack them in, and then they gather out here, talk for half an hour, hour. So it was different, it was communal. Now it's all scattered. I don't know what anybody's going to be doing.
The process of converting to digital equipment isn't cheap. Donald Zuckerman is the state's film commissioner. He says it costs between $40,000 and $75,000 per theater, which is why the state is putting up some of the money.
Literally, a theater in Vermont made an application to us for funding, which we, of course, can't do. I think everybody was pleasantly amused by it. But it shows that there's a demand everywhere, and people are across the country are trying to figure out a way to solve this problem.
It's unusual for Colorado to give out grants to this type of mom-and-pop business, but government officials say it's not just about the theaters, but about preserving rural downtowns and the communities themselves. Jeff Kraft is the director of business funding and incentives for the state.
We're able to use some of our incentive funds to make an existing business get over a one-time transition obstacle. All of them are really central to having a vital downtown experience in their communities, and they help make the communities attractive places for workers, younger workers, and make it a more attractive place for employers because you have a workforce in place that can enjoy downtown amenities.
In your smaller, more rural, less touristy communities, it's just harder to get the foot traffic and the people.
Catherine Carell heads Downtown Colorado, Inc., a statewide nonprofit that focuses on building vibrant commercial areas. Her group is helping theater owners who aren't used to fundraising.
Some of the theater owners are very savvy, but some of the people who are less focused on being business owners and more focused on, I love running a theater, and I love the people who come in and the popcorn and that nostalgia, those folks maybe some of them were less able to see this coming.
Most of the state's independent theaters have already made the digital conversion, but several theaters have closed their doors. Donald Zuckerman says it's crucial for these 13 rural theaters to convert.
If these digital cinema packages aren't purchased and placed in these theaters, there'll be no films available, no first-run films available for them to play. And the kids in the community, if they're watching television and they see, you know, Thor is the movie, that's the movie they want to see.
Back in Brest, Joe Maketa received $20,000 from the state. He still needs to come up with an additional $30,000 to buy a digital projector. The community is trying to rally around him, but time is running out.
They say the end of the year, so I don't know.
And while digital conversion has a lot of perks, including better quality and cheaper distribution, the projectors don't last forever. The shelf life is about 6 to 10 years. The state says it wants to make sure if these theaters do survive, they're able to plan for the future so they don't end up in this very same predicament again. I'm Benta Berglund at the State Capitol.
Capital coverage is funded by the Gill Foundation's Gay and Lesbian Fund for Colorado, a proud supporter of local organizations like the Colorado Department of Education and its programs to prepare and inspire the next generation of science, technology, engineering, and math teachers.
For KVNF News, this is Brian Cambria.